countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Caller Gas, celebrating 80 years, bringing energy to Ireland's homes and businesses.
I have a book in front of me, and it's called Standing in Gaps, and it's been written by Seamus O'Rourke, who himself is no stranger to the programme and no stranger to the studios here in front of me. Good morning, Seamus.
Good morning, Damien.
You made it up from Leitrim.
Made it up from Leitrim, and I'm still a long way from you here. They've put in an extra desk for me.
Well, they have, yeah. Well, you can see me just about.
Just about, yeah.
Times we live in, Seamus, and it is the times that we live in that gave you the opportunity to sit down and write this with the help of your mother.
My agent. No, I had planned to write this during the summer, and then in March, of course, the whole thing came tumbling down. I had a tour on the road, and that was all cancelled. So I said, right, well, it gives me an early start. But the fact that I had something put by for normally the summer would be a very quiet time for me. So this opened up. Yeah. All sorts of things for me. So I got stuck into writing this.
Do you know what it proves to me, Seamus? You're well known all over the country. You're an actor, you're a writer, and people know you. But I mean this. This book kind of proves to me what they say, that there is a book in everybody, because it literally is you just sitting down and talking about life growing up at home in Drumshangor in South County Leitrim. And as somebody was saying to me earlier, it's a kind of a love letter to that area, to your family and to the people and the characters that dotted your life and that area from before you were even born.
Yes, and I got an opportunity about 8 years ago. I actually did this program. I was talking to you eight years ago, and the next day a publisher rang me and said, you know, would you ever think of writing a memoir? Now, at the time, that was completely off my radar. But I thought, because at the time there was self-publishing wasn't really a thing, I thought a publisher coming to me, I should try this. So I, of course, naively started to write a memoir, thinking that people would be interested in my life. And when I read it back, I thought, that's a load of rubbish. And so I scrapped the idea. But I've been thinking about it ever since. And then I began to realise I didn't have a very exciting life. Nobody in South Leitrim or West Cavan or any of that area had a very exciting life. But I want to pick, I decided that I would pick little moments from my life, starting off with the year I was born, or even the year before I was born, and just concentrate on those, zoom in on little moments. And so in that, I found a kind of a structure for my book, and I felt very comfortable writing it then.
Yeah.
And
so it's a chronology from the days before you were born till, I suppose, you became an adult at 18 or 19. So what makes this unique is that you're reaching back to a time that you obviously can't remember yourself. But I'd say anybody of the older generation, your relations or people that lived around that part of Leitrim, if they were to read it, the ones, if they were still alive, they'd say, I remember that. So that's right. See, you, with the help of your mother, you're able to kind of put together your life story from a baby.
And because the early part of my life, there was a lot of, you know, we had no television for a long time. So there was a lot of stories being bandied about. So I kind of knew the early part of my life. And what I really wanted to do was capture that. I mean, I suppose we all think that we have lived through a crossover stage, but from 1965 until the 80s was a very there was a great change took place in rural Ireland, and we went from, you know, every farm had a horse at the time to you know, to getting the televisions and all that sort of thing. So I wanted to highlight that because there's a lot of fun in it. And this is not a heavy book.
No,
this
it's not. No.
I didn't dig up any trauma or anything.
Well, you had a happy childhood.
No, I didn't. It was miserable. But in hindsight, it was happy. Yeah.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. As you're growing up, you were being dragged up rather than growing up.
Yeah.
But what I say is that you came from a very loving family. Your mother was very young when she met your dad.
Yes, she was. She was. She got married when she was 18, and he got married the same day. and he was 33, so there's 15 years difference in them.
Right.
Which didn't pose any problems whatsoever, only that she was a young woman who could work like the devil and did physically and every other way. You know, she yes. was...
She was only from down the road. It was an arranged marriage.
Not at all.
Was it not?
No, no, no. But there wasn't much option.
Oh, no, her father's parents,
as far as we're aware, was an arranged marriage.
That was the arranged marriage. Yeah, but she was from very close by.
Very close by, yes.
So they knew each other from quite young.
Yeah, they did, although she was reared in... her mother died when she was only 16 months old, so she was reared in Cavan up in Arva. Yeah. So she came back with old Cavanisms and Cavan speak.
Well, do you know what? That comes true in the book. And as somebody with strong Cavan connections, I spent all my summers in Ballyjames stuff. And like, I'm a bit younger than you, but I can identify with an awful lot in it. Do you think that, we'll say, people outside of that, we'll say 20-mile radius of Arva, which goes into North Longford and into Leitrim and up yeah. towards the border with Fermanagh and over towards, we'll say, Ballyjames stuff in that area, that it's like a little republic of its own, that Leitrim is a long county. There's probably a Donegal part. I know it has an identity of its own, but there's yeah. probably a Donegal part and maybe a bit of a Roscommon part. You're definitely from that Cavan part that has language and phraseology in this book that I can identify with, but might be a little bit alien to people outside that area. Am I right?
Yes.
Did you live a life there that was somewhat unique to...
It was, but I think that's why I try to remain true to the way I speak and the language, because I think the one thing I tried to avoid was sounding like a writer and a proper writer. So I decided to use
you wrote it as you speak.
As I speak. And I've realised, because lots of people have read this, and I sent drafts to a few people, and even people that grew up in Britain and England, and they all, you know, some of the phrases are strange to them, but they all identify with the characters and yeah. the human aspect
and the simplicity of life
and the simplicity of it. Yeah, I mean, I used the word drudgery quite a bit. And then the consistency of that drudgery, you know.
Yeah.
But it was a slog, but it was, you know, we weren't poor as in, we always got enough to eat. I mean, look at me, you know.
So your father was a farmer.
Yeah.
And your mother helped out.
A reluctant farmer,
yeah. And your grandmother, I know, lived with you, and you had the outside toilet, no television, and you got your first leather football and all of that sort of thing. And the GA became a very important part of your life then, Seamus, not so much farming.
No, the farming was, for me, was just, we had to do these jobs from, we were very young, you know, 4 or 5, you were out, I don't know what we were doing, cocking hay or whatever it was.
Feeding calves.
Yeah, but so the football was a kind of a way out. It was the...
escape.
An escape and just doing something that you were getting a little bit of credit for and a bit of praise from. You wouldn't get it at home, but you did get it elsewhere. And then county football was such a huge draw, because then that got you even further afield than we
away from the farm, off training.
And off on a bus around the country. So that was my, it was my outlet. And in some ways it was my education, because I quit school so young, but getting out and about and mingling with fellas who were actually being educated properly was my education.
Well, it's very interesting. Here you are sitting in front of me, having written this wonderful memoir. You've written so many plays. You're well known on national radio, and yet you absolutely detested school, so much so you left at 15.
Yeah, I hate it. I don't know what it is. Someone asked me that recently. What was it? And I don't know. I just didn't like being told stuff.
Not told what to do.
And the people who were telling me, I wasn't sure how much they knew either. So I was a bit sceptical of the whole thing. Yeah. So I can't honestly say I'm in such a silly twit to be turning my back on education. But I not only did I quit early, but I kind of quit before I left, as in I didn't
get thrown in the towel. Well, do you know, we're going to prove to you now it's not all about education, 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 because you're going to read a little piece maybe to show us the skill that you had all the time.
Okay.
So I'll let you introduce this and we'll get another piece from you later on, Seamus.
This is just, it's an old chestnut. It's about my first Holy Communion. The chapter was called Holy Moly. The night before my first Holy Communion, I slept in a hairnet. There wasn't one bit need for me to sleep in a hairnet, me with the most predictable hair in three provinces. But Mammy said I had to sleep on my back with my arms by my side in a hairnet, in case I'd ruffle my extremely clean, round, soft, straight hair. That was Mammy's way of saying, this is very important, don't mess it up on everyone. I hated my hair and my head, and this makeshift outfit hanging on the end of the wardrobe. What's more, I hated the wardrobe and the peeling wallpaper and the black streaks of tar coming down the chimney breast, and I hated St. Patrick in his sandals looking down on me, all disappointed. He was lucky he wasn't taken off the wall that morning and shoved out the window where we emptied the pots. This was not going to be the kind of a day that normal youngsters look forward to. My brother Kevin, he slept in a hairnet too. He looked like a girl. And my brother was the farthest thing from a girl. He was my role model. And there he was in the bed beside me, looking like I had slept with Joe Bunn's mother. But at least he was going to my communion in long trousers. And yes, he had a cardigan too, but Kevin was thin. He could wear wool. He could have worn both cardigans and he'd still look okay. Why did I have to carry all the weight of this family? Mammy was shouting up at us to get up. We had to get up to help do the things, even today. Especially today, because we'd have to be ready for Mass early and not be traipsing up through the chapel and Mass on and the state of me. Normally Mammy would be outside when we'd get up, but this morning she was downstairs waiting to see how we looked. She wouldn't let us take off the hair nets until we were ready to go to Mass. Otherwise we'd probably get our hair caught in something. Now it would have to be covered completely for doing the things, in case it got splattered by a cow's tail or a dunt of a calf. We could have worn hats, but she decided to put plastic bags over our netted noggins instead. Nowhere else in the world would this take place. A dig into our dignity and a slur on our standing is what it was. Kevin was, as always, agreeable and headed off like a bald eagle to bring in the cows. I too had to abide. I offered it up to St. Jude, the patron saint of hopeless cases. The morning felt quite surreal as we did our jobs. I felt like I was preparing for something big, but nobody was telling me what it was. I knew about the Holy Spirit and the body of Christ and all that, and I was sorry for telling lies at my first confession, but what was I supposed to do? I didn't have any sins of my own. I was an 8 year old from South Leitrim in 1973. Sins were like hen's teeth back then. Today was going to be just one embarrassing situation after another, enough to piddle on yourself with shame, and I did.
Seamus O'Rourke.